day that we should give some time towards those topics. At least tonight, we'll see. Maybe even next week. Maybe not. Well, next week we'll still decide. But there are a couple of different angles from which one could pursue this topic. But the fact that we don't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, there's a lot to say about that. A lot to say about what exactly is represented in that fact that we won't necessarily go into so much tonight. One could also talk a lot about the reasoning given, at least according to the way we understand it from the Bavli, the notion that we don't blow shofar out of concern that we might come to Machal Shabbos, what's known as the Gzeira Derabba, of Shema Yaviranu Dalet Amnes Bereshis Larabim, the fact that we're afraid that if we were to blow shofar on Shabbos, we might come to carry it in a public place. So that itself is much to say about, and that also we won't necessarily focus on tonight. The Nakuda that I'd like to focus on is particularly the idea that this is an example of, presumably an example of, that Chazal have the ability to be oikir davar min haTorah. That here we assume that as far as the Torah is concerned, we have an obligation to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, no matter what day it is. And we have an obligation to take a lulav on the first day of Sukkot, no matter what day it is. And yet, here Chazal come and tell us not to. And we're not going to go into the fact that the Rishalmi suggests that maybe this is a drasha from a pasuk, that maybe it was kind of always that way. But rather, we'll assume the way it seems to be suggested in the Bavli, that this is a gezeira derabbanan that overrides the din min haTorah. So the Torah tells us to blow a shofar, and the rabbis come and say, don't. And that's a notion that seems to represent this concept, Yesh Koyach Dechachamim Lakar Davar Min HaTorah B'Sheva Al Tasa, that the rabbis, the expression we find in the Gemara Yevamos and Daf Tzadi, Daf Peites and Daf Tzadi and elsewhere, that there is power, there is koach given to Chazal to uproot a din min haTorah, provided they do so B'Sheva Al Tasa. What exactly Sheva Al Tasa means, we'll have to look at it a little bit. For now, we'll just translate it very superficially as passively, that if they're telling you to not do something rather than telling you to actively do something, so if they're telling you to simply sit back and not perform a Torah obligation, that seems to be something they're allowed to do. An example that the Gemara actually gives more explicitly is the Gemara Maseches Menaches, where we're told that as far as the Torah is concerned, one is supposed to put tzitzis on his four-cornered garment, even if that would mean that he's going to end up wearing shatnas. That's the din of the Torah. Midrabanan, the rabbi said not. Various concerns, the Gemara lists three or four concerns that we have, that one might end up with a violation of shatnas without a performance of the mitzvah of tzitzis. So because we're worried about that, so the rabbi said, do not do what the Torah says to do, and do not put tzitzis on this garment if there's going to be a situation of shatnas. And the other Gemara says, yeah, that's the power they have. Yesh koach lakar davar min haTorah b'sheva al tasa. So I'd like to spend a few minutes looking at the concepts and the principles behind this idea, and primarily to give acknowledgement to Rabbi Chaim Wasserman, who has a very often quoted shtickle about this topic, which we will draw upon a little bit and go in a few other directions. But certainly the most prominent essay on this topic is Rabbi Chaim's essay that appears both in his Sefer and Yevamos in the Kovei Tzaharis. What siman it is depends on what printing you have, but in his Sefer and Yevamos, Tzidaf Peites Daf Tzadi, he has an essay about this. And the essay is pretty much identical to that which is printed in his Sefer Kovetz Shiurim. In the Kovetz Shiurim, there is a section called Kuntras Divrei Sofrim, where there's a number of essays mostly touching upon topics of rabbinical law. And there as well, Rabbi Yochanan has this essay. And in that essay, he poses a chakira that has three parts, has three questions. And the questions taken together all tie in one to each other. It's a beautiful little structure where he has these three interlocking questions. So I'd like to look at those questions one by one. So the first question that he raises is, what do we mean when we say these words, that the rabbis have the ability to uproot Torah law? So uprooting sounds very extreme. Is that indeed what's happening? Are the rabbis really uprooting Torah law? Are they taking a mitzvah that was there and saying that it's gone? It's no longer there? Or should we perhaps assume that no, they don't have that much power? Rather, the power they have is to tell you to ignore Torah law. So in other words, they have authority over you as an individual, which is binding. And it is binding so much so that you have to follow it against Torah law, but the Torah law itself remains unchanged. So this is an issue which comes up in a number of cases in the earlier Sfarim. For example, there is a view of Rabbeinu Yonah that provoked a lot of controversy. Rabbeinu Yonah, in the first daf in Shas, in the first daf in Brachas, discusses the view of Chachamim that Kriya Shema could only be recited until Chatzos. That Min HaTorah Kriya Shema could be said all night, and the Chazal came and said only until Chatzos. So Rabbeinu Yonah had a radical shita. That Rabbeinu Yonah says that this means that after Chatzos, not only is it a b'di'evet time, not only are we saying that l'chadchila you're obligated to follow this gezeira and to say Kriya Shema before, but says Rabbeinu Yonah, no, it's even more than that. That they were oker the mitzvah after Chatzos. That after Chatzos, there is no longer any fulfillment of the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. They wiped it off the chart. Which is a very extreme thing to say. Because, first of all, it's not really precedented in any of this discussion. Because we find the rabbi is telling you to sit back, to sit out a mitzvah, in order to protect the possible violation of a Navera. Here, Kriya Shema is unique because we're being told to stop, to sit down a mitzvah and to consider the mitzvah gone to protect that own mitzvah, to protect that same mitzvah itself. So that's a very unusual formulation. So it's not really comparable to the existing precedents, and it's definitely thought-provoking in and of itself. So the Maisa, the Shagas Aryeh, and later Moshe Feinstein and others didn't accept Rabbeinu Yonah, didn't believe that this was necessarily the case. And the truth is, even Rabbeinu Yonah didn't accept Rabbeinu Yonah, because Rabbeinu Yonah says this really in the view of Chachamim. But he himself holds like Rabbeinu Gamliel in the Mishnah, Rabbeinu Gamliel, that Kriya Shema is all night anyway. This is according to the opinion that he doesn't hold like, that there's a Gezerah of Chatzos, so he understood that to mean that the Gezerah resulted in the uprooting of the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. So we find this in other places as well. Maybe most prominently, there is a machlokus between the Tosis and the Ran in the beginning of Maseches Sukkah, where Tosis has a comment. The Gemara there talks about the Gezerah that one shouldn't sit with his head and his body outside of the house in the sukkah, but his table is going to be inside the house. Because Chazal knew that a man tends to follow his dinner plate, and therefore if his food is inside the house, pretty soon he'll be eating in the house. So they made a gezeirah that even though Min HaTorah, that would be called eating in the sukkah. But the rabbi said, no, don't do it that way. It's not proper. So the Gemara tells us that some of the students of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai came to somebody's house, and they saw that he was eating this way. They saw that he was in violation of this gezeirah, that his table was inside his house. And they said to him, that's what you do? Im kein ha'yisa noeg, lo kiyamta mitzvah sukkah miyamach. If that's what you're going to do, then this is not the fulfillment of sukkah. You've never fulfilled the mitzvah sukkah. So that language, lo kiyamta mitzvah sukkah, makes it sound as if the mitzvah was completely uprooted. And that is indeed the view of Tosus. While the Ran, we disagree. The Ran says that it doesn't mean what it sounds like, lo kiyamta mitzvah sukkah miyamecha, yiram makayim mitzvah sukkah. It means that yiram makayim it perfectly. That you fulfilled the mitzvah min haTorah, but on a level of the Rabbanan, you're lacking, and therefore it's not a complete fulfillment. This is the Ram L'Shitaso, one of the more famous Mishnah, the Mishnah that we recite in the Haggadah, when we say that Kol Shlo Amar Shlo Shidvar Me'ilu L'Yotzi Yidei Chavaso, we say Pesach Night. So there as well, the Ram says, doesn't mean you're not Yotzi at all. It means that you didn't do it perfectly. Since you're not Mechuyiv Min haTorah to say these three things, so we can't say that you're not really in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Haggadah. We mean that you didn't fulfill it perfectly. So too, the Primogodim has a discussion, if you have mitzvos, which exist on one level min haTorah, and midi rabbanan, there are additional requirements. So if you leave out the rabbanan part, one might be able to maintain the non-fulfillment even of the mitzvah min haTorah. For example, Kiddush, many of the Rishonim maintained that min haTorah, you don't have to make Kiddush on wine, and you don't even have to make Kiddush makom suta. Midrabanan, I certainly have to. So what if I recite Kiddush nowadays without wine, without makom suta? Am I at least yotze min haTorah? Or do we say no, that I'm not even yotze in level min haTorah, the rabbis came and redefined the whole story. Benching nowadays, benching is a mitzvah min haTorah. But nowadays it has a format with four brachos. That fourth bracha at least is drabana. So what if I were to bench and to leave out that fourth bracha? So would anyone maintain that I'm in fulfillment of a mitzvah min haTorah at least? So there again, that's the same sofik the Primogodim had. It's interesting, a number of achronim wanted to make a chiluk, which I could have said the opposite. But they wanted to say that maybe you should distinguish that when you have a mitzvah, and the rabbis redefined how the mitzvah is to be performed, Kiddush al HaKos, or benching with four brachas, and the like, so then the mitzvah is still good, even if you don't do it with all the details. But when Chazal are worried about you violating an Avera, and they ostracized you from doing a mitzvah, even they have a mitzvah, they ostracized you from doing it, so then maybe it makes more sense to say they completely negated the mitzvah. Again, I could have heard as far to say the other way around, that the mitzvah is still good, just they ostracized you from doing it in those cases, while in the cases of Kiddush or benching, they actually redefined what it was. But a lot of Achronim took the opposite path and said, no, that there, they just added a new level, so ideally that's the way you're supposed to do it. But without that, the mitzvah is still there. While in the case of the possible Averis, they actually negated the mitzvah, otherwise the risk of the Avera would be too great.
Just going to the first one, I mean the charge of Rabbanim, what they were charged with was Asita Neshmanis and Neshmartai. So when it's there's much more reason to say that when it's a Safed Yirmi Oivra on something, that's where the Koach Darais of the Rabbanim kicks in.
Yes and no, because that Koach, we know that Koach exists either way. Right? We know that in both cases they have the right to make gezeiras to protect us from averas, and you're right that that's probably the main focus of asisa mishmaris to mishmarti, davka to prevent averas. And we also know, at least from looking around, that they have the ability to add on obligations to mitzvos as well. So our question is not whether they have the koach to do that. Our question is what's the implication of that koach? Is the implication that it would actually wipe the previous version off the map? So that's where some are saying that maybe in the case of the positive mitzvos, it does not. The old mitzvah is still there. And in the case of the averus, which are really about something else, there the mitzvah that you're being told to sit out is completely wiped off the map. So it's a little bit more of a chiddush. So the relevance here is a safek that defines it already in the Talmud Yerushalmi, and Rabbi Akiva Eiger talks about this in his Drush for Chiddush. Let's say somebody would blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, Shechalios, B'Shavas. So do we say there's nothing there? There's no mitzvah whatsoever? Or do we say, no, he was in violation of the Gezeirah D'Rabbanan. He's not supposed to do it. But at least the mitzvah min haTorah of shofar he did fulfill. Similarly, as a contemporary sefer, Shalos Shuvos Evin Pina, who talks about the question of a lulav, you take a lulav the first day, this year when it's Shabbos, and then the next day, take a lulav when everyone else is doing it for the first day, he's doing it the second day, so should he make a shechiyonu like everyone else does on the second day? Do we assume that this is the first time he's doing the mitzvah because it doesn't count what he did the day before? Or should we say that no, this is the second day because even though he wasn't supposed to take it the day before, it still counts? So Rabbi Chanan in his shtickle, so he quotes an interesting suffix from the Sefer HaEshkol, Siman Lamed Beis, as the following question. So we mentioned before the whole example in terms of tzitzis, the idea that Chazal told us not to do what the Torah says, and not to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis if it creates shadrins. So ask the Sefer HaEshkol, so what if somebody would do it anyway? What if somebody's going to say, I'm going to follow the din of the Torah, I'm going to ignore the rabbis, and I'm going to wear tzitzis on my garment creating shadrins? Does he get malchus for violating shadrins? So it seems that this is relevant, the way Rabbi Chanan understands it. Quotes Rabbi Chaim was a different understanding. But Rabbi Chanan's understanding is consistent with this question. That do we say, on the one hand, that the mitzvah of shatnez, or really the mitzvah of tzitzis here, was completely uprooted? So therefore, this guy is no better than anybody else wearing shatnez. He's wearing shatnez for no reason. So his avera of shatnez is equal to every other avera of shatnez, and therefore he should be chayav malchus. Or do we say that no, that on a level min haTorah, the chiyuv tzitzis came and knocked out the yisur shatnez. So he's not liable for malchus for shatnez. He's not supposed to do it because the din drabbanan. So what he violated was a drabbanan not to do this. But so maybe you get Marcus Martis, that's a separate discussion. But the Minatora Isser and Chiyuv Malchus for Shatnez, that he doesn't have, because the Maisa said Tzitzis was Doichet. So that suffix seems to fit in here. Now, all of this, I think, really plugs into a much larger discussion, which I'm not going to spend a lot of time here because it deserves a whole discussion of itself. But there is a very major Machlokas HaAchronim about the power of Chazal in general. And that many Achronim assumed a view that is associated with the Nesivist, even though the Nesivist himself doesn't say this straight out. But the Nesivist Siman Reish Lamedalet is the basis for this, and many other Achronim say it more explicitly within his words, that when the Rabbanan created an Isser, that Isser does not affect the Chefza. The Chefza is still neutral. There's no Chepza shall Isser on a level of the Rabbanan. But it's only an Isser Daraisa that would be a Chepza shall Isser, that God created the world and God wrote the Torah. Therefore, things that are Asher Minat Torah, so that's a Chepza shall Isser. And that, for example, has a spiritual effect, spiritual harm. Somebody eats non kosher food, Minat Torah. Even Bishogeg, there's a spiritual harm to that, because it's inherently bad. While the Rabbanan say he's a chronim in the Nesivis, the Rabbanan cannot have any status to it, because the object was neutral before the rabbis came along. So the rabbis have no control over objects. So therefore the object is still neutral. Their control is over Jewish people. They can tell the Jewish people not to eat this item. So that's an isser on the individual. But the item is still the same. That's a view many achronim took. Perhaps in the minority is the other way of seeing it. Rabbi Yosef Engel is a prominent example of that camp. He writes in his Asma Daraisa that he thinks, no, that a Rabbanan, just like a Daraisa, can have a Chefza status, because a Kadosh Baruch Hu comes and agrees to that which Chazal do. So therefore, after the fact, once the rabbis asser, let's say, a chicken cheeseburger, so then a Kadosh Baruch Hu comes and he stamps that as a Chefza Shalis. How you doing?
Correct. Saying it's an Isra Torah almost, you can say almost.
Maybe.
That's how there is a chesed of Isra, just based on the fact that it's a race.
Yes, that's a whole discussion. Where exactly do we have the right to distinguish between the Raisas and the Rabbanans once the power for the Rabbanans comes from the Torah? So it deserves a whole separate discussion. But for now, I just want to touch upon it just to show the connection here, and maybe we'll come back to this and we'll give it its full head-on treatment. But that Achronim seems to parallel, that Machlokas Achronim rather, seems to parallel the Tutzdadim here. But according to what I think is the more popular view in Achronim, the first view, so the rabbis have authority over Jewish people. The rabbis can tell Jewish people what to do. But they don't change reality. So the item is still neutral. So too, they can't rewrite the Torah. So the Torah says there's a mitzvah to blow shofar in Rosh Hashanah. There's still going to be a mitzvah to blow shofar in Rosh Hashanah. It just means that the rabbis have the power to tell you to ignore that mitzvah. But they can't take it out of the Torah. While according to the view that perhaps lines up with the Rebbe Engel's position, that Kadosh Baruch Hu endorses it after the fact, so then maybe that's the case here as well, that Kadosh Baruch Hu now has signed off on this mitzvah being negated, is no longer any fulfillment of a mitzvah to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah if it happens to be Shabbos as well. So that's a brief overview of some of the issues that are relevant to the first Chakira. The first question of the three questions that Rabbi Chanan has, what exactly do we mean by Akira Stavim and Torah? So that's some of the issues, those are some of the issues that tie into that.
Where in the Lashon of Akira and Davar Min HaTorah is Mashman that we're just being Doche, something Akira Davar Min HaTorah is Mashman?
It sounds more absolute, 100%. And that's how we said it before. That does seem to be the case, that Akira has a very strong sense to it, that it sounds like it's meaning literally uprooted. So if we're just going based on the language of the Gemara, which we don't have much stock to put in that, but if we go based on that, then you're right, then that does push us in that direction. Second question B'chanan has is as follows. We said before that we were being kind of superficial in how we're translating Sheva Altase. Because Sheva Altase really has at least two possible meanings. On the one hand, it could mean that we should act passively. That the rabbis can tell us to sit home and not do something, even if that seems to fall short of a Torah obligation. But they can't tell us to do something wrong. Now, alternatively, we could say that it has to do with whether the mitzvah is a aseh or a los aseh. That they can tell us not to fulfill an aseh, but they cannot tell us to violate a los aseh. Now you might say that's the same thing. What's the difference? We just restated it. So that's not 100% the case. Maybe there's a 98% overlap between the two terms. But there are mitzvos in the Torah that are active even though they're phrased in the negative. Lo sola nivlasa, right? You can't do halana sameis. So to do halana sameis, one would really be acting passively. One would allow somebody to be going unburied, to go unburied. But it's phrased in the Torah as a lav. So how do you categorize that? Do you categorize that as a lo sase, lo salin? Or do you categorize that as a bitl, as a sheva al tase, because you'd violate it by not doing something?
Could you say that? I'd say that.
Yeah, just to give, there are many examples, to give this one example. So it's not a double negative, actually. Well, that's really not a double negative. It's a positive mitzvah to bury the dead, but it's phrased as a negative. So it's really referring to an action. You should bury this person. So I would call that on one hand an aseh. But the Torah uses the language of a los aseh. The Torah says, lo salin, don't allow it not to happen. So well, that's not exactly an isra aseh. An isra aseh is an isra that comes from it not being specifically mutter. Like when you talk about non-kosher animals, so the Torah tells you what animals are mutter, so we know that the animals that are not listed are aster. So but here we're talking about what's essentially an action, something you should be doing. But the language the Torah uses is don't not do it. So maybe we should call that a don't.
Is it called the lav hava michal aseh?
Not exactly. That's also a little bit different. But here, this is essentially, it depends on what you want to focus on. It's phrased as a lav, but it's referring to passive behavior. So are we interested in behavior? Or are we interested in categorization? Are we interested in what volume of the Sefer HaMitzvahs it goes in, the aseis or the los aseis? Or are we interested in whether it's telling us to be passive or telling us to be active, regardless of how it's phrased in the Torah? So it's interesting. There is a three-stage l'shitaso on this point in the Rashba. There are three Rashbas at least, which seem to be all taking the same stance on this issue. To begin with, there is a machlokus between the Ran and the Rashba in the beginning of Masachas Ksubas. And Daf Gimel Amud Beis, Dalet Amud Alef in Ksubas, so the Gemara tells a sad story as follows. There's a chasen about to take place, and everything is ready to happen. And then, Rachman al-Islan, right before it's about to take place, so one of the family members passes away, the father of the chasen, the mother of the kala. So now you're confronted with both a funeral and a wedding at the same time. So the Gemara says they should go ahead with the wedding, keep the mace in another room, then they should go ahead with the funeral. So now you have both Sheva Brachos and Shiva coming at the same time. So the Gemara says you should first have Sheva Brachos, then have Shiva. So some of the Rishonim ask, well, that's all very well and good if you hold the majority view in Rishonim that both Shiva and Sheva Brachos are both rabbinical concepts themselves. So Chazal ordained these two practices. So Hey Mamru, they decided how we should prioritize them. However, there is a view in Rishonim, the Rif and the Rambam, that at least the first day of Avelus is Minat Torah. So if that's the case, how are we able to push off the first day of Avelus till after Sheva Brachos? Sheva Brachos is Rabbanan and the first day of Avelus is Minat Torah. So the Ran and the Rashba agree that the answer is Yesh Koach Chazal were Oker this din of the first day of Avelus. But after agreeing on that point, they diverge on an important application. That according to the Ran says that yes, you can skip this first day of Avelus, but you have to do that passively. You don't have to actively engage in any mourning rites. But you can't party on that first day either. Because to party on that first day, that would be a kumvase in contradiction to the Avelos. So yes, yesh koach lakadav min haTorah, the rabbis can uproot the din of Avelos, but only passively, so you can't do anything active that will go against the rules of Avelos. And the Rashba doesn't have that qualification. The Rashba just seems to say, Yesh Koach, the rabbis were okerit, so that's it, no Avelus anymore. So Rabbi Chanan explains, it seems to be that this is the issue. That according to the Ran, when we say Sheva Al Tasa, we're interested in behavior. So we want that you should be passive. So therefore, even if we'll allow the person to skip the Avelus, he has to do so passively. He cannot actively do anything in contradiction to the Avelus. And the Rashba sees it as an issue of categories. That the whole Avelus is like one big assay, which has details that end up as prohibitions, but it's all a function of there being one mitzvah assay lehisabel. So Chazal were just oiker that. They uprooted this mitzvah assay. And the fact that that means you will act actively against the normal rules of Avelus doesn't matter. Because he's not interested in behavior, he's interested in categorization. That's one Rashba. This is consistent with another comment to the Rashba. The Rashba, in the middle of Maseches Rosh Hashanah, has a comment where he talks about the fact that we have to define the Isser of Baal Tosef. It's a very complicated thing. That here you have an Isser in the Torah of Baal Tosef, and the Rishonim don't agree at all as to just the basics of what is covered by the Isser of Baal Tosef. We don't know what that Isser means, per se. So, in laying down theories, the Rashba writes that if Chazal were to tell us to do a mitzvah twice, Torah says do it once, Chazal would tell us to do it twice, says the Rashba, that's not Baal Tosef. How does he know? He says, because let's look at the inverse. We have a notion of Yesh Koach Lakar Davar Min HaTorah. And that means functionally that Chazal can tell us not to do a mitzvah. Now, Mimela, if they can tell us not to do a mitzvah, it must be that that's not Bal Tigra. So if it's not Bal Tigra to tell us not to do a mitzvah, so too it's not Bal Tosif to tell us to do a mitzvah twice. So you could ask on that, Rashba, hold on a second. That doesn't necessarily follow. Because maybe Chazal were Oker, the Yisra Bal Tigra also. They were Oker, whatever din, and at the same time, they were Oker Bal Tigra. So the answer seems to be that no, according to the Rashba, they can't be Oker Bal Tigra, because Bal Tigra is a Losase. So even though it would only be a question of acting passively, you'd be leaving out a mitzvah, if that would indeed be a violation of a lav, apparently that would be outside of Chazal's power as far as the Rashba is concerned. So that's consistent with that previous Rashba, that he sees it as a function of categorization rather than behavior. So the third Rashba, I remember I was learning many years ago with Chavrusa, the Gemara Maseches Gittin, which talks about Prusbul. So just to give the background, Prusbul is a little bit of a misconception. Many people will tell you that, oh, Prusbul is an example of where the rabbis acted, so to speak, against the Torah. Because the Torah says that you should cancel your loans in the Shemitah year, the end of the Shemitah year, and the rabbis came and they uprooted that by creating Prusbul. So the truth is that's not really accurate. The Gemara raises the question of how Prusbul interacts with Torah law, but not because of the way we just said it. They're not worried about that. Because the Gemara says the reason Prusbul works, besides the fact that Prusbul was really a pre-existing mechanism that Hillel just activated, but the operative issue there, says the Gemara, is that it's not uprooting a Davar Min HaTorah. Because the working assumption of Prusbul is that Shemitah B'Zman HaZeh is D'Rabbanan. So therefore, Shemitah's Ksafim nowadays is only a mitzvah D'Rabbanan. So it's not so surprising that Chazal could modify that, so to speak, or give us a mechanism with which to deal with it. So the problem is, the Gemara raises a question not on the institution of Prusbul, because according to the Gemara's understanding, that's fine, it's a Drabbanan anyway. But the Gemara asks a different question. Wait a minute. Shemitah Drabbanan? So you're telling me that Min HaTorah there's no Shemitah, and you're obligated to pay back your loans. And the rabbis instituted a Din Drabbanan that you don't have to pay back your loans? It's a violation of Lo Sigzo? Because you have to pay back, as far as Torah is concerned, you have this debt. And the rabbis are telling you not to pay the debt. So that's what bothers the Gemara. How do you have Shemitah D'Rabbanan to begin with? So the Gemara has two answers. One answer is Hefker Bezdin Hefker. It's a monetary matter that Chazal have the ability to manipulate. And another answer is that no, Gemara says Shev Al Tasa Shani, which sounds very much like it's drawing on this principle of Yesh Koach B'Shev Al Tasa. So when I was learning this like a number of years ago, the Chavrusa, so we had a question, wait a minute, how's the Rashba going to deal with this? Because it sounds like from the Gemara that the way Rashi explains over there, you have an Isser, a little Sigzol, and not paying back. And Chazal are apparently Oikarit. So if you believe that Shev Al Tasa is about behavior, okay, so you're passively not paying back your loan. But if you believe it's about categorization, so Lo Sigzol is for sure allowed. Assuming that that's relevant here, which the Machlokes has shown him itself, but Rashi says that it is. Rashi says it's a violation of Lo Sigzol in not paying back your debt. So, at the time we were bothered, how would the Rashba deal with this? It's against his whole Yisod, that allowed they cannot be Oiker. So at the time I had this brilliant Einfall in the Rashba, and maybe we could figure out what he would hold by opening the Rashba on that daf and see what he says. And indeed, if you look at the Rashba over there in Gittin, so you see that he taka learns the whole sugi differently. And maybe that's again l'shitaso, because he, according to the previously established shita, he would not be able to be oker a losase of losigzo. Just parenthetically about the hefker bezdin hefker point, just to go back to something we mentioned before. So the whole idea of the sukkah, the position we've shown him that if you violate the gzeru of sukkah, you're not yotze. So the Dvar Avram quotes a suggestion that that's also based on hefker bezdin hefker. So he's assuming that since you have to own your sukkah, there's a concept of a sukkah having monetary value, so therefore, specifically in areas like that, maybe Chazal have the ability to make the sukkah hefker, and therefore cancel it that way. So it's not necessarily a sweeping principle that because they made a gzeira, the mitzvah is gone. Maybe it's something localized to something like sukkah, that maybe their control over the monetary component allowed the mitzvah to be negated. Just a parenthetical point about that. So that's as far as the first two questions are concerned. So the third question is a much briefer discussion, but to see how it connects the first two questions. So the Bukhanan's third question is, this whole limitation of Sheva Al Tasa, this whole idea that Chazal can be oiker a mitzvah only passively, or whatever it means, Sheva Al Tasa, why should we have this limitation? Once we acknowledge that Chazal can, so to speak, challenge Torah law if they find it necessary, so why don't we say that they should be able to do it across the board? Why should we impose this limitation of Sheva Al Tasa? So Bachan imposes two theories, and the question is which theory is right. Because on the one hand, you could say that it's simply a limitation on power. That the assumption is that to uproot a losase, that takes more clout than to uproot an ase, because an ase is generally considered to be a little less severe. So maybe they have enough power to uproot an ase, but a losase, that would be too much. That's one theory. The other theory he has, is that maybe we could say that it's not about that, but that the issue is we're basically stuck because we have two conflicting sets of instructions and they're mutually exclusive. On the one hand, we have the Torah saying blow shofar on Shabbos. On the other hand, we have the rabbi saying, don't you dare. So we have two conflicting sets of directions. And we can't make them both happy. We can't both blow the shofar and not blow the shofar. So what do you do if you have, let's say, two parents telling you to do something which is contradictory, without getting into Hilchas Kibud Av V'Em, the same preference of the father, just if you don't want to get killed. So what do you do if you have your father telling you one thing and your mother telling you the other thing? So you could say that even though I can't make them both happy, the safest route is to stay out of it. If I stay out of it, I'm still not accommodating the parent who tells me to do something. But at least I'm not flying in anyone's face. It's less offensive for me to stay out of it, even though I'm still de facto picking a side that way, but at least it's passively, not actively. So maybe, says Rabbi Chanan, that's what's going on here. They have a conflicting set of instructions, blow the shofar and don't blow the shofar. So at least if we don't blow the shofar, so we're staying out of it. In keeping of the often stated principle, in such a case, shave al tasa adif, you're at least better off not doing anything. That at least doesn't have the same level of offensiveness as doing something against instructions.
That's what Chachamim are telling you to do.
Right, so Chachamim are telling you one thing, Torah is telling you another thing. Can't make them both happy, but if I'm passive, at least that's got an edge towards being passive.
But the Chachamim are telling you to be passive.
Correct. So either way you're going to do it, you're going to favor one side. But if you have to choose one, choose the side that's passive rather than actively inflaming someone. Hi.
How would the behavioral aspect, or whatever you want to call it, how would that fit into this? Because we said that you're allowed to do a say.
So I think it would fit 100%. That's the thing. This is where it all ties in. that, we'll start from the beginning, I'll show you how they all tie in. That if you believe that the mitzvah is completely neker, the mitzvah is uprooted totally, so then it makes sense to say, let's go to the third question, that the chiluk is based on severity, that I can be oker and aseh, but we don't have as much power to be oker or lo aseh. If so, so then the distinction between sheva al taaseh and not should be based on severity, should be based on categorization. But if I say that the mitzvah is really still there, just the rabbis are telling us not to do it, so then it makes sense that it's the other explanation, that essentially we have two conflicting sets of commandments, and they're both still in play. The Torah's mitzvah is still there, and the rabbi's mitzvah is there on top of it. And therefore, the definition is going to be the behavioral definition rather than the category definition. That it means passively stay out of it, whatever that means in terms of the language of the pasuk. So that's the answer, that the question of whether it's behavior or category is going to tie into the explanation of why it is that we prefer Sheva al Taaseh to begin with. So that's essentially Rabbi Chanan's presentation. Maybe I'll add one more vort that draws upon this point. Then we'll close. It's already late. There is a discussion. A lot of Sfarim ask, why did the rabbis not similarly make a gzeira when it comes to Bris Milah? Well, when it comes to Bris Milah, so we perform Bris Milah on Shabbos or any other day it falls out. Why don't we make the same gezeira, that same way we don't blow shofar or take a lulav? Maybe we shouldn't have a bris on Shabbos either. So many suggest that this might be related to the Taz. There's a famous Taz. David Cohen in the Sefer has a whole essay about this, and he says it's such a prominent Taz. If somebody says the famous Taz, they're talking about this one. This is such a stam famous Taz, is this Taz. The Taz says it in three places, actually, in three different Chalakim and Shulchan Aruch. It says that the idea that the rabbis can make gezeiras that are not covered by the Torah, that's fine. But they don't asser things that are explicit in Chumash. If the Torah says beferish that something is mutter, then they don't come beferish and say and asser it. They only asser things that the Torah didn't asser. But they don't asser things that the Torah explicitly was mater. So some say that's the answer here also. So when it comes to Bris Milah, so we have a source, Minat Torah B'Yom HaShmini, even if it's Shabbos. So therefore, the rabbis maybe can't come and ask for that. And it's different than Shofar and Lulav, because Shofar and Lulav don't need a pasuk to be not to them, because Minat Torah, there's no problem with blowing a Shofar on Shabbos. There's a Gzeira D'Rabbanan of instruments, but there's no problem in Minat Torah to blow Shofar on Shabbos, even for fun. Stam to blow shofar on any Shabbos, there's no Isser Minat Torah to do it. So therefore, we don't need a special drasha telling us that on Rosh Hashanah we'll blow shofar on Shabbos, because there's no reason in Minat Torah not to. So there's no explicit source in the Torah that you blow shofar on Shabbos. There's just the general mitzvah to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, which includes Shabbos as well. When it comes to Bris Milah, a chavala, a surgery, would be Aser on Shabbos. It's a malacha. So therefore, we need a pasuk to tell us that you do a Bris Milah on Shabbos. And that pasuk is now the equivalent of the Torah telling us specifically to do the Bris Milah on Shabbos. So maybe the rabbis can come and ask for it. That's one approach.
Chavala is like on a higher level.
Chavala is a malacha. Chavala is considered to be a tolda of shochet.
And but blowing shofar is not?
Blowing shofar is not asur min haTorah.
It's
just as a gzeira, not to blow instrument, to play with instruments on Shabbos. But in the Torah, there's no iser. So therefore, there's no reason for the Torah to give us a specific heter to blow shofar, a special drasha to blow shofar on Shabbos Rosh Hashanah, because the basic mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah is going
to
include Shabbos.
Lulav.
And lulav also, there's no iser in the Torah in taking a lulav. So therefore, it's only a drabanan. So the Torah never tells us specifically to take lulav on Shabbos, because there's no reason to. There's no reason to think you should.
So bris is just an aseh to chelot aseh.
So, well, bris is a special drasha in the pasuk. Be Yom HaShmini, even Shabbos.
Drasha itself is derabana.
So, the drasha itself is taken to be a deraisa. That's a little bit of a chiddush, but that's.
Drasha is deraisa.
Yeah. The drasha, well, that
it's
was.
Not the
Lacham, no, that's the difference between a smach and a drasha.
I'm saying like they agree.
But a drasha is almost always taken to be, a real drasha is almost always taken to be minat Torah. But even then, you could still say it's a chiddush in the Taz, because maybe the Taz could have meant that not just drashas, but dafka davar hamafurish b'kra. It has to not only be from Torah authority, maybe it has to be explicitly from Torah authority. So that's a chiddush, but the idea that drasha is minat Torah, that's how we generally assume. A smachta, though, is probably different, according to most Rishonim.
If they would say it's Alachom Shishinai.
Alachom Shishinai also it has a significance as minat Torah without being in the Pesukim. That's a whole separate discussion. And it's pretty powerful stuff. So that's one answer. So I thought you could say a different answer as well. And you could say as follows, based on what we were talking about. There is a discussion, Tosfos has in a couple of places, in Megillah and in Kiddushin, that the Gemara has a pasuk telling us that women are pater from bris milah. Not from having a bris milah, that we understand, but they're pater from giving a bris milah to their sons. And Tosfos raises the question in Kiddushin, and also in Pesachim, because there the Gemara has a drasha to exclude women from Karban Pesach. So in both cases, Tosfos asks, it's a mitzvah seisha as man grama. Mila is for whatever reason, either because it's only from day 8 on, or it's only during the daytime. In Karban Pesach, it's mitzvah seisha as man grama. So women are pater anyway. So why should we need a pasuk telling us that women are pater? So this is Fasemis and Psachim writes, and others write as well, that maybe the idea is that since we know, if I were to ask you what's the commonality between those two specific mitzvos, mitzvos Milah and Korban Pesach, so you'll say those are the only two positive mitzvos that have an onesh connected to them. That if you don't do them, so you chayiv karetz. So maybe, says this Sfas Emes, that's an exclusion from the principle of mitzvah seisha azman gram. Because maybe that means that we view those mitzvos like a losas. So why would we view them like a losa say? They're still a mitzvah sasei at the end of the day. So apparently, it's a reference to severity. That maybe for these purposes, the chiluk between asei and losa say, it's not really about whether mitzvah is a losa say or an asei. It's about the severity of a losa say. So usually, almost all mitzvah sasei are less severe than losa say because they don't have punishment. And the two exceptions are Milah and Korban Pesach. Since they have an Onesh, so that means they are as severe as a Losase, and therefore for those purposes considered to be a Losase. So based on that, we could say, according to that one side of Rabbi Chanan's Chakira, that if the issue is Sheva Al Tasa is not about passive behavior versus negative behavior, but it's about severity, that a Losase is generally more severe, then maybe you could say that bris milah is also begeder lo saseh, even though it's a mitzvah saseh, since it's got an onesh, it's as severe as a lo saseh. So if the issue is severity, so then maybe Chazal couldn't be oker that either. And therefore, Shabbos and Sukkah, they could be oker, and milah maybe not. That's just a ha'ara, drawing on what we spoke about so far. Okay, so ready, ladies, just to quickly chaz what we spoke about. So we spoke about this question of what does it mean that chazal could be oiker mitzvah minat Torah. The example relevant to us right now is blowing shofar on Shabbos. The Gemara also gives an example of not wearing tzitzis if it's going to create shatnez. And we saw Rabbi Chanan has this three-part chakira. The first part we discussed is mean mitzvah is gone or it's there, just we're not supposed to do it. And we saw Rabbi Yonah's whole suggestion that chazal were oiker the mitzvah of kriyashma after chatzos, as Shai Gisayi and Moshe Feinstein disagreed with. We discussed some of the unusual aspects of that position, discussed the machlokes between the Tosfos and the Ran and Sukkah and Dav Gimel, about what does the Gemara mean when it says we violate the Gzeirah of Sukkah lo kiyamta mitzvah Sukkah miyamecha. Tosfos sees it literally, the Ran sees it not so literally, just as he says by the Mishnah and the Haggadah about Lama Loyosi Dechavasa by Haggadah. And then we discussed also the Prima Gadim Safik about mitzvahs like Kiddush and benching, which the rabbis have enhanced. So does that mean the mitzvah is no longer applicable on a level of Minat Torah? I mentioned the chiluk some Acharonim have, which we thought maybe you could say the opposite, but some Acharonim have this distinction that an enhanced mitzvah saseh still retains its deraisa format on a core level, while a gezeira to prevent a lo saseh, that would actually negate the mitzvah completely. And this is relevant to the whole sukkah, to the whole shofar issue. What would happen if somebody blows shofar on Shabbos? So would we say that he is not in fulfillment of anything because the mitzvah is gone? Or would we say, no, the mitzvah of the Torah is still there, but the rabbis told us not to do it? And that's presumably, as Rav Chanan understood, the explanation of the suffix of a sefer eshkol. What if somebody would wear tzitzis in a way that violates shatnez? So is he chayiv malchus for shatnez? Do we say that he's in violation of the Yisr Shatna is no better than anybody else? Or do we say that no, the mitzvah and Torah of Titzis knocked it out, just on top of that, there's Yisr Rabbanan to observe that did. And we also suggested that this is related to the whole machlokus, let's say the Nesivis and Rabbi Yisrael Engel, for simplicity's sake, about how the Rabbanan works. Do we say that the Rabbanans can create an actual Heftar Shal Yisr, like Rabbi Yisrael Engel? Or do we say that no, they can only address people, but the world around them stays the same, like many other Acharonim. So that's presumably the same issue here. Do we say that just like Chazal may not be able to create a Chafetz Shel Iser, so too maybe they can't rewrite the Torah? Or maybe we should take the opposite view. Then we discuss the second Chakira, the question of what does it mean to say Sheva Al Tase? Does that mean passive behavior? Does it mean categorization as an Aseh or Loz Aseh? And we saw three Rashbas L'Shitaso. Concerning the question of being okra avelus for Sheva Brachos, the Ran says you still have to just sit passively and not do anything because of Sheva Al Tase, and the Rashba doesn't have that distinction, presumably because the Rashba believes it's one big assay that was knocked out. And it's presumably with Shetoso and his comment about Bal Tosef doing a mitzvah twice. If Chazal tells to do a mitzvah twice, it's not Bal Tosef, because they can also tell not to do a mitzvah and that's not Bal Tigra. And even though you could have said, well, they could just be okra the whole Bal Tigra, apparently that's not the case. Apparently, they can't be Eker Elos, I say. And then we saw also the Gemara Bab Prusbul that says that Shemitah is Drabanan, and then raised the question, how could Shemitah be Drabanan? How could Chazal tell us to be over Elos Sigzal not to pay back our debts? And the two answers of the Gemara, the Hefker Bez and Hefker, Sheva Al Tase Shaini. So that would seem to challenge the Rashba, because here you have a Elos Sigzal, you have a Lav, so even if it's passive, how could that be? So you saw attack of the Rashba understands the whole Sugi differently. And the third Chakira was, what does it mean? Why do we have this preference for Sheva Al Tase? Why don't we go all the way? So either we could say because they simply don't have that much power, or you could say that's because it's up against the mitzvah of the Torah, so Sheva Al Tase Adiv. And we saw these three Chakiras tied in, that if you believe the mitzvah is totally gone, so then maybe the chiluk of the Sheva Al Tase versus Kum V'Aseh is based on severity, and the explanation of why Davka Sheva Al Tase is also based on how much power they have, up against that kind of severity. Well, if we believe the mitzvah is still there, so then maybe Sheva Al Tase is because you have conflicting instructions, and therefore the Sheva Al Tase is behaviorally, you should stay out of it rather than getting involved in that fight. And then we just added on this whole discussion of why were Chazal not Oker, Mila, and Shabbos, and there are many answers, but we mentioned two. One, the suggestion that this is based on the Taz, that it can't be Oker something as Beferish and Chumash Lahatir, like Mila and Shabbos. And we suggested another approach, that maybe they can't be Oker Mila, because Mila, even though it looks like an assay and it's phrased positively, but because it has an onesh, so therefore maybe it has the severity of a los assay, maybe the whole chiluk is based on severity. And that's consistent with this Fasemis' discussion, the Tosus and Psachim, the Tosus and Kedushin, why the Gemara needs a pasuk to pot their women from Mila of their children and Karban Pesach. Why don't we just say mitzvah say shazman grama? So maybe it's not called a mitzvah saseh, even though it is a mitzvah saseh, since it has an onesh that puts it, as far as these purposes are concerned, they, so to speak, caucus with the low saseh, and therefore it has that status. And the fact that it's a positive action phrased positively is not going to necessarily run the day. Okay, so we will stop there. We'll figure out what topic is good for next week, whether it be more Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur topics, or maybe something else. But to wish you a wonderful evening. If anybody has any requested topics, they should please feel free to bring them forward, and it will be duly considered.
Very last, I mentioned the status of this. also.
Stucker sugya, sure.
Is it stuck also? Is it not say that has a loss to say what's
not? Oh, we mean, you're not requesting stucker, you're saying.
He says, I think he even quotes.